Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Striking Hollywood actors and actresses rally in New York City. The third largest trucking company narrowly avoids a strike. And today on the show, the government affairs director of the AFL-CIO and the latest from the Maritime Trades Department. Welcome to the Thursday, July 27th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Mr. Bill Samuel will be our first guest on the show today. He serves as Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation. That would be the AFL-CIO. Complete updates at AFLCIO.org. And Bill has his hands full, as he always does. He's going to talk about some big congressional fights ahead. And this is primarily because of what's happening with House Republicans. Slash and burn. That's pretty much where they are. They want to cut transportation by millions of dollars. National Labor Relations Board. You know there's a lot of organizing going on right now, and many of them don't like unions, so they want to slash the budget for the National Labor Relations Board, which would take it back, you ready for this, to 1998 in regular dollars. 1998. And then there's OSHA. The Republican money bill would reduce OSHA by more than $100 million. $100 million. And a couple of workers' rights groups are speaking out on that and say, wait a minute, we need to boost OSHA. There's a couple of problems, a number of problems going on, especially with worker safety. So why are we going in that direction? And it's interesting to note what's going on in America right now because, and I say this on the show many, many times, the needle's moving in the right direction, and primarily that's because of the policies of this administration in the first 2 years. And you know what? Wall Street is recognizing this. Last Friday, the global financial services company, Morgan Stanley, big name on Wall Street, they credited President Biden's policies with driving a boom in large-scale infrastructure and manufacturing. Analysts have doubled their projections for the fourth quarter and raised forecasts for next year as well. One of the chief economists, Ellen Zettner, said, "The economy in the first half of the year is growing much stronger than we had anticipated, and part of their reasoning comes from a surge in manufacturing construction across the country, thanks to the bipartisan infrastructure law, which, of course, invests in roads, bridges, and other hard infrastructure projects. Then you throw in the Inflation Reduction Act, which invests in addressing climate change, CHIPS and Science Act, which invests in science and semiconductor chip manufacturing." Now, let me reference this. If you go back 10, 12 years, manufacturing construction generally held at about $50, maybe $80 billion a year, $50 to $80 billion. You know what it is now? $189 billion, with private investment following the government investment. In half of the U.S. states, job creation is strong. Unemployment is at or near 50-year lows, while lowering inflation rates has helped U.S. consumer confidence to rise to its highest level in 2 years. So these policies are working, but there are many elected leaders that don't want them to work. Bill Samuel will talk about all of that and more. Mark Clements will be joining us later in the show, and he is the new Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Maritime Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. He took that position on April 1st. He was previously named the administrator of the department. That was 2 years ago. Mark grew up in a very strong labor household, raised by a chief shop steward and an AFSCME dump truck driver. He comes to the MTD from the Seafarers International Union, where he worked for about 9 years as assistant director for communications and content curator. He's going to talk about working to rebuild the network of port maritime councils, and there are many around the country. Many of them went dormant during the pandemic. And right now, they've worked on getting Boston and the Baltimore area port councils back online, Norfolk, Virginia being next in line. And he'll talk about what the Maritime Trades Department is actually doing, the history of the department, which goes back about, 60, 70 years. So Mark Clements, website, by the way, maritimetrades.org. Mark Clements, Maritime Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. So what's happening in our world of labor? Let's find out this segment on the show brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Big rally in New York yesterday. Members of SAG-AFTRA staged a mass rally. This was in Times Square. A number of celebrities like Bryan Cranston, Christian Slater, and others attended what they call the Rock the City for a Fair Contract rally. The Guild is demanding its members' fair share of streaming revenues, increased compensation to match inflation, and protections when artificial intelligence creates digital replicas of their performances. We talked about this on the show last week. It's amazing. They don't want to compensate anybody once they capture you on artificial intelligence and use it repeatedly. A number of high-profile labor leaders and officials from various unions also show their support at the rally. Now, this week, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez showed her support for the strikers, including the Writers Guild of America workers. They've been on strike since the beginning of May. And she criticized executives like Warner Brothers, Discovery CEO David Zaslav, for their insatiable greed. She also joined the picket lines at the Netflix offices in Union Square, declaring this moment a hot labor summer, as workers across the country face similar challenges of wealth concentration and corporate greed. Once again, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking her piece in New York City this week. Yellow, the third largest U.S. trucking company, narrowly avoided a strike by its workers yesterday, 22,000 of them. The company missed a payment to the employees' health and welfare fund, putting workers' health benefits at risk. The fund, at the urging of the Teamsters, agreed to extend benefits to unionized workers and grant Yellow a 30-day extension to make a $50 million payment. Now, Yellow's request for an order to block a strike because it would send the company into liquidation was dismissed by a federal judge last Friday. The company, get this, they received a $700 million pandemic relief loan and still holds $1.2 billion in debt. It has repeatedly petition the union for help reducing expenses through worker concessions. Yeah, blame the workers. You run the company into the ground, but take it out on the workers. Well, that's not sitting well with Sean O'Brien, president, general president of the Teamsters. He rejected the request, saying that Yellow has only itself to blame for being in this embarrassing position. 2024's Democratic National Convention will be hosted in Chicago, and good news here, Democratic officials are already engaging local unions to sign a labor peace agreement. Now, such an agreement is standard for the National Convention, but this is the earliest the committee has ever attempted to secure it. The agreement ensures that President Biden and the DNC will use union labor to put on the convention, and in exchange, the unions will not picket any work stoppages before the event. The agreement is scheduled to be signed sometime this week, which is almost ending. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Bill Samuel on behalf of the AFL-CIO coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number one. And from Washington, Mr. Bill Samuel is joining us today. He always joins us on the last Thursday of each and every month. He's been a contributor to the show for many, many years. He serves as Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO, website aflcio.org for complete updates. And for the last couple of days, we've been talking about what House Republicans have been doing. It's kind of like a slash and burn. And Bill, I mentioned, by the way, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you.
Bill, I was talking about some Wall Street types. And Morgan Stanley, I mean, everybody knows Morgan Stanley. They were saying, boy, this economy is really amazing. It's like manufacturing and bipartisan, all the policies. They cited all the policies of the first 2 years that came out of the White House and what it's doing in America. Now, unfortunately, the polls don't reflect that for Biden's popularity. These take time. I understand that. But here we are. The economy is moving in the right direction post-pandemic, and all of a sudden, you got a lot of people, elected leaders in the halls of Congress that are saying, well, we got to cut this. We got to cut the NLRB. Too much organizing going on. We got to cut OSHA. We don't care about worker safety. Bill, explain the madness that's going on right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, madness is a good way to describe it. I think the problem is where people are getting their news, in part. They're not all listening to you, Flash, which is a problem. They're getting their news from networks and podcasts and websites that are talking down the economy. I mean, this is, you know, they're lying about the economy. They're still, you know, bloviating about inflation and out of control spending and deficits. And, you know, it's just not true. As you've cited, Morgan Stanley, they're hardly a progressive outfit. It's a, you know, about maybe one of the biggest, if not the biggest investment house on Wall Street. They've set the facts out for people to see, and those facts will be reported on, you know, through the mainstream media. But it won't be heard by a lot of people, and so they'll believe what they're hearing, and which is, as I said, Republicans mainly tearing down the economy, blaming Biden for whatever they claim are the problems. And so we're living in two realities. I know this is not something you haven't talked about, and it's not a new theory, but we are really living in two realities now, and that's a major problem. And it means that even the good things that President Biden has accomplished, 800,000 new manufacturing jobs, the lowest unemployment in 50 years, building trades jobs, roaring back. I mean, I talk to the trades all the time in Washington. I work alongside them, and they couldn't be more pleased with the state of the economy. I mean, you can always do more, and nothing's permanent, but right now you've got more people working than ever in the trades. Yet, a lot of people don't know it, they won't hear it, and they may never know it if we can't figure out a way to break through and educate them. And that's, you know, part of our political program.
Sure.
Is to educate our, at least our own members. Now, they may be watching Fox, but at least we can talk to them at the work site and try to get these facts across.
So, Bill, why don't you explain what's happened here in the last couple of weeks? Because it's pretty amazing. I mean, we're not talking small cuts here. We're talking huge cuts. Give us some examples.
Right. So the House Republicans are, you know, they're not moving away. They are sprinting away from the deal that Kevin McCarthy made with President Biden back in June. This was to, you know, deal with the debt ceiling. Remember, we were at the edge of a cliff. We were about to default on our country's debt, you know, which would create a cascading international economic crisis. McCarthy came to his senses, got his own caucus, which is full of extreme right-wingers, to agree to raise the debt ceiling so we could continue to borrow where we need to and pay our bills, by the way. And in exchange, Biden agreed to hold spending basically steady for the next 2 years. So what he managed to accomplish in the first 2 years when Democrats were in charge would basically be status quo for the next 2 years. And within, 48 hours, the ink wasn't dry, McCarthy began moving away from that deal, reneging on it, and now that they're starting to pass these annual appropriation bills, you're seeing huge cuts in the coming out of the House of Representatives. The bill that was introduced that hasn't passed yet in the House that funds the Labor Department and labor programs like the NLRB, OSHA, the Wage and Hour Division, those kinds of Department of Education, Health and Human Services, it's all wrapped up in one bill. It's the biggest domestic spending bill. They are cutting those programs in the case of the Department of Labor, 28%, education, 34% cut, a third in one,
wow,
1 year. And then when you dig down and look at the actual programs, they cut the NLRB by a third. So from almost $300 million, they'd go to $200 million. And this is at a time when we have a record number of election petitions, union election petitions, and ULPs being filed. This is not an accident. This is exactly what the Republicans want. By the way, it goes back to the earlier point. They're tearing down the economy, and now they're tearing down government, which will only make things worse. And then they can really point to the need for, you know, an overhaul of our country, and that's what they want. So it's really quite scary. Now, the fact is, the Democrats still control the Senate, at least by one vote, and nothing passes without a presidential signature. And Biden is not going to sign these bills if somehow they get through the Senate. And my last point on this is that I think we're headed for a government shutdown. I think in October, I think there's a very good chance McCarthy will not be able to wrangle his forces. I'm not sure he even wants to. And they're going to be at loggerheads over these issues. And we'll have a government shutdown, and like we did when Trump was president. And I'm not sure how we resolve that, but it's a slow motion train wreck, is what I'm trying to say that I think we're watching.
So what was a deal is no longer a deal.
A deal is not a deal when Kevin McCarthy signs on the dotted line. And you know, I'm not sure how to deal with that because again, if you half the country or a third of the country is watching networks and reading posts online, which they don't explain this, and they talk about raging inflation. I'm sure they talk about unemployment as if it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Now, the economy is not flawless. I mean, Biden says that. We say that. You know, all these manufacturing jobs that are being created, 800,000 a record, they're not all great jobs because they're not all union jobs. And
right.
We need to keep working on that, and we are. And I think the president is determined to make them union jobs. So I don't want to gloss over the fact that we have challenges and, you know, people are feeling that. And they know prices went up after the pandemic. And they haven't gone back down, by the way, but at least the the rate of increase has slowed, you know, dramatically. So anyway, it's a somewhat complicated picture, but the Republicans make it much worse than it sounds, and that's leading us, I think, down a very dangerous path.
Well, to your point on the creation of all those manufacturing jobs, my reaction to that is one step at a time. Okay, we create 800,000 manufacturing jobs. Okay, they're not, you know, they're not paying $30, $40 an hour or anything like that.
Not yet.
But not yet. But that's where the unions come in. That's where you got the labor board, and they know what's going on. They know that there's organizing going on, and they don't like this NLRB. I mean, that's
you're
the bottom
exactly right.
line.
Well, look what just happened at UPS.
Yeah.
Teamsters just negotiated a historic agreement to raise wages, protect health care and pensions, get rid of, you know, limit part-time work, and got rid of two-tiered wages. The business committee doesn't like that. Geez, I was watching, I don't know if anybody on this, any of your listeners watch Jim Cramer. It's on one of these finance business shows on cable. And he was decrying the contract because he's essentially saying it's, you know, he's anti-union and he thinks that it's too expensive. And then he even made a point that the UAW is going back to its, you know, sort of age of militancy and that was a bad thing. So this is what, you know, this is what a lot of people hear and see. And it's why we've got such... We got a lot of work ahead of us before this next election.
And Bill, that's why we do this show. You know, we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about UPS, and the way the mainstream media portrays that is, oh, you might not get your package.
Right. Like, that's the most important thing to worry about.
Exactly.
But, you know, forget about drivers expiring in the heat because there's no fans or air conditioning. Right. You may not get your new toaster oven or whatever you're waiting for.
So let's get back to this government shutdown, possibly in the fall here. What's the game plan here to thwart that kind of thing, Bill?
I honestly don't know. You know, these bills that the Republicans are drafting in the House that I was referencing that, you know, that move very far away from what was agreed to just in June. We're talking like, 2 months ago. They haven't passed yet in the House. There's a small group of moderates, but I think they're going to buy them off. I think they're all scared of Trump and the MAGA Republicans and the extremists in their party. So I think most of them, by September, you know, before the fiscal year ends, September 30, most of them probably will have passed the House, with no Democratic votes. There's 12 bills. That's how the government's funded. You know, defense, transportation, labor, and education, as I said, financial services, et cetera. They probably will pass the House. None of them will pass the Senate in their present form. They may pass very different bills in the Senate, not cutting Department of Labor by 30%, for example, probably keeping it held at current levels at least. And then they have to conference. So the House and Senate have to get together and try to figure out, is there a midpoint? Is there a compromise? I don't think the Republicans in the House want a compromise. They're not afraid of a shutdown. I mean, you know, we know their history, that they're essentially the anti-government party. So if there's a shutdown, they'll probably celebrate. And then I don't know how you get out of it. Hopefully cooler heads will prevail. The one point I would make about that is, in past shutdowns, the public was not pleased. You know, national parks closed, government services shut down, all the services the Republicans forget or provided to the American people. You're not going to get your tax refunds. I'm not sure how you fund the Border Patrol during a shutdown. So there are a lot of reasons that I think this flips the script on Republicans, and all of a sudden the public is thinking to themselves, hey, wait a minute, we need the government. What are the Republicans doing? And that's historically what's happened. We've had shutdowns before. We had one under Trump. I think we had one when Gingrich was Speaker back in the 90s, and Clinton was president. My memory's a little fuzzy, but there have been at least two shutdowns, I remember. And they ended up making the Republicans look very bad. They came back to the table, and they made an agreement. And I sort of suspect that's what will happen again.
The Border Patrol, boy, if they're not able to work, that's going to be a big issue, especially
right.
for the GOP.
Can you pay the military? Can you pay veterans' benefits? You know, what they'll try to do probably is continue to pay what they want to pay. But I think Biden is tougher than people have given him credit for. And my guess is he's going to say, no, it's all, you know, we're either going to fund the government or we're not. We're not just going to fund your favorite programs. Now, I think Social Security checks continue to go out. I think those are protected during a government shutdown. That's my, again, a hazy recollection from last time. But government employees will not be paid. And in fact, some of them have to work without being paid. You know, the air traffic controllers during the last strike were forced to work during the shutdown. I think they worked without pay for about 2 weeks, and there's some other essential employees, and then they got paid back retroactively when the government reopened. So that there may be some of that where people are working because they're considered essential, and then they'll get paid, presumably, when a deal is made.
And they're stretched pretty thin right now as it is.
So. Oh, they are. That's right.
Boy. You know, here's what I don't understand. You and I have talked about this over the years. We're talking about a minority of people here that are very vocal, and they're running the show. And let me take this one step further. Tommy Tuberville down in Alabama, he's holding up all the military promotions. One guy.
That's right. It's a very anti-democratic process, unfortunately. We've lived with it for 80 years, however long. And that's a concern. You know, we've got a filibuster rule that takes 60 votes in the Senate to pass a bill, not a majority, not a simple majority. Very rarely have we had 60 from one party, and now we've got 51 Democrats, 49 Republicans. Very difficult to get to 60 on anything. And in the House, the Republicans have a 4-seat majority now. A handful of moderates, but a bigger handful of extremists. In the Republican Party, the people calling them MAGA extremists. They don't care if government shuts down. Frankly, they would have been fine with a debt ceiling. They would have been fine with a default. But that is a problem. We don't have a terribly functional government. Now, some people argue it's good to have divided government because then they have to compromise. And that's a good theory if both sides are willing to compromise. But the extreme Republicans are not. Democrats are, by the way. I don't believe in this both-siderism. You know, we've got extremes on both sides. The Democrats are not extreme. The public generally supports Democratic policies, and Democrats have shown a willingness to compromise. The extreme Republicans have not. We really have to keep our eye on that.
Bill Samuel joining us in our live line today. He serves as Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO. We'll continue with him later in the show. We're going to check in with Mark Clements, who is the new, for the past couple of months, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Maritime Trades Department, also affiliated with the AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Bill Samuel on behalf of the AFL-CIO, where he serves as Government Affairs Director. All right, Bill, give me an update here on Julie Sue. I know a couple of Republicans do not want her as the next labor secretary. She served as a deputy secretary under Marty Walsh, who left back in March, and she's the acting labor secretary. Politico reported this week that the Biden administration will keep her acting indefinitely. Can you explain this process here and why they don't like Julie Sue? Go ahead.
Yeah, I can't explain why they don't like Julie Sue, except for the fact that she is has a lot of experience. She was the labor secretary in California who was really tough on companies that, withheld wages, violated the overtime laws in California. She was an enforcement-minded secretary there. And that's her reputation. That's why we like her. It's why a lot of folks in the business community don't, although in California she worked with both sides. And in fact, the L.A. Chamber of Commerce has endorsed her to be the labor secretary. So she's not anti-business. She's pro-labor, but not anti-business. And she believes in the mission of the department, and she's got a lot of experience, and she's wicked smart, as they say, in Boston, where Marty Walsh is from. So Marty retired. He was the secretary since the beginning of the Biden administration. Julie was the deputy secretary. She was confirmed to that job with a majority of senators, and so under the law, when the secretary leaves, the deputy moves up and becomes acting secretary. President Biden nominated her to be the secretary to get another confirmation under her belt. And right now, she doesn't have probably the 51 votes she would need it. Now, in the case of nominations, you don't need 60. It's a little quirk in the Senate rules. They don't need a supermajority, just 51. We think she probably has 50 votes right now, maybe 49. There's a couple we don't know about. I hate to say it. Keep coming back to this. Joe Manchin has come out against her. Kyrsten Sinema won't say how she's going to vote. And we don't know if we have any Republican votes to confirm her, even though she had Republican votes when she was confirmed as deputy secretary. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. But under the law, she can continue to serve as acting secretary, having moved up to that slot from the duly confirmed deputy indefinitely. And I think President Biden is going to say, okay, I've got how many months left? 16 months or something in my term. And if you're not going to confirm her, we're not going to start the process all over again. You know, it takes about 6 months to get somebody confirmed these days. So there's no point in having her withdraw and trying to find somebody else. And we're okay with that. If they give her the respect and that she deserves as secretary, even though she's acting, we're fine with that. She'll be able to get a lot done. And she's already been on the road. She's not, hiding in a closet. She's doing her job. And it's unfortunate. She doesn't have the 51 votes right now. She may get them, by the way. Kyrsten Sinema may wake up tomorrow and say, okay, I've seen enough. I'm going to vote for her. And then they can bring down the vice president and then break the tie. Then there'll be 51. But Joe Manchin was a big disappointment.
Yeah,
by the way, he was the one who called her a radical. I don't know what he was referring to there. I really don't. But, there's a lot of talk about him running as an independent for president. Although I hope he runs as a Democrat in West Virginia for re-election, because they need him, and he's probably the only one who can win.
But Julie Sue was okay at number two. They just don't want her at number one.
We talked earlier about the Labor Department funding cuts. This is all, this is all part of the same package. They don't want a labor secretary. They don't want a labor department. They just assume not have a National Labor Relations Board. So it all kind of, connects. And I think people have to see those connections to really understand what the extreme elements in the Republican Party are all about.
Yeah. I remember one of them in Arizona, Andy Biggs, I believe his name is. Mm-hmm. He wants zero money for OSHA. Zero. Just dump
them. Don't believe.
Get rid of them altogether.
Absolutely. There are a bunch of them who want to get rid of Medicare. They don't believe that seniors should have, any help when they've, retired. making sure that they're getting the health care needs met. I mean, this is a you're on your own party, at least
right.
element of it. They don't believe in
it. Bill, do you realize what would happen in this country if they got rid of Medicare?
Yeah, well, it would be like, you know, the 1920s again. We'd have poor seniors. You know, right now, seniors are, although Social Security is not a overly generous program, seniors are having their needs met. You know, they're not on the street. They're not, nobody's starving. And that's, we'd go back to that era if that's what they want, if that's what Republicans want.
Exactly. Okay, there's another nomination here, and I guess she's getting some traction, Gwen Wilcox. And this is a seat on the National Labor Relations Board. Can you explain what this is? What's going on here?
A critical seat, you know, kind of, not widely known probably among the public, but the National Labor Relations Board is composed of five members. The majority party, the party of the president, has three of them. The minority has two, so right now we have three Democrats serving. We actually only have one Republican serving because one Republican stepped down and hasn't been replaced. So we have a comfortable majority on the board. And they're making really key decisions about bargaining rights, unfair labor practices. They're looking into changing some of the rules for organizing, for who's considered a joint employer. They're talking about overturning some precedents that allow companies to hold captive audience meetings. So this board is really aggressive, and they're doing great work. And so one of the Democratic seats is held by a woman named Gwen Wilcox, who is a former union lawyer in New York. Great, great member of the board, very smart. And her term expires August 27th. She has to be reconfirmed for another five-year term. President Biden has renominated her. She's through committee. She got a Republican vote in the committee to show you how good she is. Lisa Murkowski, Republican from Alaska, voted to confirm her for another seat. Now, her term expires August 27th, as I said, and then she has to stop work. The Senate is leaving probably tonight for the August recess, maybe tomorrow. It's unclear. Maybe the Majority Leader Schumer will keep them a little bit longer, but it seems like they may not get to this vote because it's going to be a complicated vote. They're going to have to file cloture, and there's going to be 30 hours of debate. You know, the Republicans are going to make it as hard as possible. But we think she has the 51 votes she needs. Hopefully, before they leave, if they do, Schumer will make it clear that she will be the first vote when they come back the day after Labor Day, and then her term, she'll only have missed a week of work. If it goes beyond that, we get a little bit nervous. So we've had a lot of calls going into Democratic offices to make sure they're focused on this. You know, they've got a lot of things to do. You mentioned Tommy Tuberville from Alabama is holding up all these promotions in the military. There's dozens and dozens of other nominations that have not moved to the Senate floor, including at the Department of Labor, by the way. We don't have a confirmed wage and hour administrator. But Gwen Wilcox is critical because under NLRB law, she can't serve past midnight on that day. So we really need her back, and we need that done as quickly as possible.
Bill, while we have time, there's one more issue here I'd like to address. It's the Freedom to Vote Act, which has been pushed by the Democrats for a couple of years, hasn't gone anywhere. And I understand that a couple of big unions, including the teachers, the AFT, the service employees, the communication workers, and AFSCME, they're among 260 groups supporting the Freedom to Vote Act. Do you see that being picked up here or no?
Unfortunately not, and by the way, the AFL-CIO supports it as well, of course. This would deal with gerrymandering and, you know, passing federal laws that would prevent states from suppressing the vote, from making it harder to vote, which a number of states have done in the last couple of years, you know, trying to get rid of mail-in ballots and absentee ballots, that sort of thing. This is part of Trump's campaign to make it more difficult to vote and to have people question the legitimacy of the vote. No, I don't see it coming to a vote. It would need 60. You'd have 60 votes to end the filibuster, which Republicans have made it clear they would mount against it. I think it has to wait till the next term, until Democrats hopefully are back in control and maybe even having to get rid of the filibuster. Democrats have to think seriously about that once they get back in charge. But they're in charge now, but they've only got 51 votes. With a little bit bigger majority, they could probably change the Senate rules and get rid of the filibuster, and then we could do things like pass the PRO Act and the Freedom to Vote Act and the Equal Pay Act and things, lots of really necessary and important.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, all good policies there that are just not getting any traction. Got to give a shout out here to Senator Amy Klobuchar, who is the sponsor of the Freedom to Vote Act. She's right. definitely the right person for that one. All right, Bill, we're going to leave it on that note. You hang in there. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thanks. Look forward to it. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Mark Clements is with the Maritime Trades Department. New position for him, Executive Secretary Treasurer. He'll talk about it next right here on the show.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Before we get to Mark Clements, got to give a shout out here to the operating engineers. You might have seen the video yesterday. It's posted all over Twitter of what happened in downtown New York yesterday. Four civilians, two firefighters sustained minor injuries. This was yesterday morning when part of a construction crane caught fire and fell from the top of a skyscraper to the street below. They were working on a mixed-use building. The building was vacant that they were working on, but the crane fell on an adjacent building, like it was an apartment. And this happened atop a 45-story building. 45-story building. The crane operator tried, it was a fire that broke out. Apparently, there was a leak of hydraulic fluid, and he was lifting 16 tons of concrete when he noticed that a fire started in the engine compartment. Well, he tried to put it out, realized it wasn't going to happen, so he finally got out of there for his own safety. And what's a miracle in all this is the fact that nobody was killed. There were injuries, nothing life-threatening. But, you know, the first thing I thought of on this was the training that goes in to being an operating engineer. And we'll talk about this more in the days ahead here on America's Workforce. But you got to check that video out. It's amazing. All right, let's go to line number two. And from Washington, Mark Clements is joining us. He's now the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Maritime Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. He's got a pretty good union history. Was raised by a chief shop steward and an AFSCME dump truck driver. Mark Clements, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Great. Good afternoon, Flash. I'm really pleased to be on the program. My predecessor, Dan Duncan, is a huge fan. And when I told him that you guys had reached out to speak to me, he was pleased as punch.
Yeah, I know Dan said he was going to retire, but I guess he's still hanging around. What's he doing right now?
Well, we try not to abuse him too much in his legacy stage of his career. We mostly have him running a couple of meetings. Occasionally we torture him by sending him out to go play golf at some union events. But for the most part, Dan's just helping, bridge the transition that we've been experiencing over at Maritime Trades ever since I took over for Dan and President Dave Heindel took over for Mike Sacco.
Yeah. So talk to me about your background in the Maritime Trades. And maybe also if you can explain what the Maritime Trades Department is all about at the AFL-CIO.
So the Maritime Trades, we have 24 different affiliate labor unions, and we try to keep tabs on what's happening in all of the major port cities in the U.S., and particularly our focus lately has been on offshore wind, and we'll have a lot to say about that later on in the conversation.
Sure.
As to my background, as you mentioned, I grew up in a pretty strong union household. My mom was a chief shop steward with the United Industrial Workers. It was a pretty common occurrence in our household for her to pack me and my sister up and put us on the picket line. My dad, likewise, was an AFSCME dump truck driver, and the level of benefits and care he received, especially after he experienced a career-ending workplace accident. You know, that stuff sticks with you as you go on through your adult life. And originally, I intended on becoming an academic. The academic job market, of course, is not favorable to anybody. But I trained to be an archivist, and I had done some work for the Seafarers Union on a kind of contract basis when I was in library school, and they were impressed with what I did, and they said, you know, we have a lot of union history to sort through. We'd love to have you come over full-time. I worked for them for about 9 years, and around that time, Dan Duncan, the previous executive secretary treasurer of the Maritime Trades Department, reached out and said, you know, I've heard a lot about your work. I think it's important to have somebody in this office who has that historical perspective. I think you ought to give the Maritime Trades a try. So I came over in late 2021 and worked under Dan for about a year and a half. And then back at the end of February, I was elected into this position. And come April 1st, I took over in the Maritime Trades building.
So the transition going smoothly, I take it then?
Yeah, it is. And I've been really thankful to have Dan there to, guide me on a number of issues, especially when we're talking about ports all over the country with so many unions involved. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of, previous history that you really only can kind of get a grasp on if either you were there or you have somebody who was there to explain to you why certain things are the way they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about these port maritime councils. And I know your mission here is pretty much to rebuild them because the pandemic shut them down, most of them anyway. And I guess you've made some progress. First of all, why don't you explain what the maritime councils do and how many there are around the country?
So with the Port Maritime Councils, we have these set up at various, port cities around the country. It's a way to give maritime labor unions and unions that have maritime adjacent work a round table to kind of work things out, especially since there are a lot of, particulars regarding maritime labor that are not always so easily understood. And, these councils have formed throughout the decades. Our oldest councils go back to the 40s. But their purposes have changed over time. Some things that remain the same is, community outreach, showing people what labor is capable of doing in communities, and particularly just letting people out there know what maritime labor is, what we do, and the values we represent. As you mentioned, the pandemic really interfered with a lot of their activities. Some port councils were able to kind of bridge the gap there by pivoting to doing, food banks or things like that. But considering a lot of them had social programming, like dinners and golf outings and such, a lot of that stuff went dormant over the pandemic. So we've been going around the country trying to reignite these port councils back into operation, particularly on the East Coast, as offshore wind has been heating up as a big issue for a lot of unions. We've really wanted to focus on particularly our port councils in the Northeast, because these offshore wind companies, you know, there are some bad actors out there that are trying to pit the unions against each other. And if we're not all united on some of these issues, companies will exploit that to their advantage.
Oh, yeah. I know. We focused on the state of Maine recently. In fact, we're going to talk more about that next week, because they're fighting over, you know, having a project labor agreement on a lot of the new construction there. And it's sad to see what's going on there. But that's where your work is cut out. So this process here with the port councils, I understand you got Boston and Baltimore back online. Norfolk is next. When do you see that happening?
Norfolk, we're hoping for later on in the fall. And a lot of that is just we've already done such great work in Baltimore and New England. You know, especially back in April, Maryland put the Power Act into effect, which is trying to generate 8.5 gigawatts of offshore wind energy by 2030. So they're moving fast on that. And in New England, with Vineyard Wind 1, basically the offshore platform that they're going to be using for the installation was put online yesterday, if I'm understanding that correctly. So we've really had to act fast on that. But Norfolk is going to come a little later after the summer's over. People have got their kids back in school, and we're really ready to kind of focus on Norfolk's issues and get moving on that.
Now, are there port councils like in the southern part, like Mississippi, Louisiana? And I bring that to attention because these are, well, some of them are not what you call very union-friendly states, the right-to-work states. Do we have any activity in that area?
Absolutely. We have a South Florida one that is very strong and has really stood up to a lot of the anti-labor stuff that's gone down in Florida. We also have port councils in Mobile, New Orleans and Houston, and Mobile is another one that we're going to be reactivating that went a little quiet over the pandemic. But otherwise, those other two are also very involved. Another thing that we've been looking at is setting up a port council in the Virgin Islands to get the labor community down in that area a little bit more in the spotlight.
Well, I want to speak to the Port Council in Northeastern Ohio. I know them pretty well. We record America's Workforce at Iron Workers Local 17, and they do their monthly meetings here. And there's a great group, and I met you some months back for the holiday party here. So let's keep the communication going, because we want strong labor activity, union activity in every port council, to make sure we get the message of organized labor to the people in those respective communities. Can we do that, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, in the lakes, I feel, can often be forgotten about by a lot of people who think maritime is just on the coast. And that's
right.
Definitely not the case. You know, as we both have seen for ourselves, the Port Council in Northeast Ohio is very strong. And later on this summer, I'll be checking in on the Toledo Port Council on the other end of the state, and they're also very active in their community.
Very good. Mark Clements serves as Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Maritime Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. There's about six or seven trades departments at the AFL-CIO. One of them we have on the show on a regular basis is the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, and this is just one of them. MaritimeTrades.org is a website. Mark, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Looking forward to getting together with you. So keep up the fight, okay, brother?
Absolutely, Flash. It was a pleasure to be on the program.
That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to check in with the National Treasury Workers and the United Steelworkers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.